We're going to continue with the girsa change that we did yesterday, again based on the Tosfot in the Rosh Bam, about the fact that the Gemara continued in the middle of Kuf Nun Tet, and now, so we're going to be start with the Mishnah on the Kuf Nun Chet Amud Bet. We're going to do the Gemara Shayach to that, and then skip to the second half of Kuf Nun Tet to finish up the Gemara that we didn't do yesterday. So here the Mishnah starts out. Now the Mishnah is difficult from a number of standpoints, and we'll see because it's a different format than the other Mishnayot that we saw. So it's a Nafala Bayit Alav V'Alimo. The house falls on him and his mother. Elu ve'elu modim. Elu ve'elu being Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Both agree sheyachloku, that they should split it. So Amar Rabbi Akiva, mode ani bezu. I admit in this case shenechasim b'chezkatan, that the nechasim stay b'chezkatan, which you're going to have to ask again, what does that mean? Who's chazakah does that mean? Basically, what Rekiva's suggestion is that the machlokas of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai persists into this Mishnah. As opposed to the Tanakhama, who's suggesting that they are reconciled in this Mishnah, that everybody says yachloku. But Rekiva says, no, that Beit Hillel continues to argue and says nechasim b'chezkatam. The reason that Rabbi Akiva uses the Lashon Modeh, the Rishbam suggests that the Lashon Modeh is just patterned after the Tanakhama. And Tosos gives a way to read it. What does it mean, modeh? But what he doesn't suggest, and what he disagrees with, is that there's a Rashi in Parakamafkid who suggests the reason that it says modeh by Rabbi Kiva is Rabbi Kiva Shmuti Havia Metalmidei Bat Shammai. That Rabbi Kiva was a Shmuti. What does it mean? There's a Shmuti that he was one of the Talmidim of Beit Shammai. To lo halacha. So what he's suggesting would be over here would be modeh Rabbi Kiva. Even though I'm a Talmud of Beit Shammai, here I think it goes like Beit Hillel. So Tosfos doesn't like that explanation. He says, first of all, we know that the halacha is like Rabbi Kiva, Mechaveiro, everywhere. And we know the halacha is not like Beit Shammai. So it doesn't make so much sense that Rabbi Kiva would be a Talmud of Beit Shammai, and then we'd be pasking halacha like Rabbi Kiva. So he suggests over here that Modeh means that I am Modeh. According to the one, depends who how you explain it in here, if it's Yoshea Aim or Yoshea Ben, I'm Modeh, that just like in certain cases before, where we saw in the previous Mishnah, that it either went to the one party or the other party, I admit, or I suggest that the same thing is true here. So, either way you read it, Rabbi Kiva's suggestion that the Machlokas persists. Amar lo Ben Azai. So Ben Azai, who was a, we're going to see in a second, was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, but later on it seems his status changed and he became a Talmid Chaver, which we'll see in the Gemara, and also he was a potential son-in-law to Rabbi Akiva, although it's not clear, based on the Gemara of Subas and Yevamot, whether he actually consummated the marriage with his daughter Rachel. So, Alach Cholukim, or Alach Chukim, Anu Mitzdarim, we're already upset on the places where there is a machlokas. Here we'll at least have some reconciliation between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. You want to extend the machlokas into this Mishnah? You have a hard enough time that they argue in all the other Mishnayot. Why would you want to bring the machlokas further along? So now the problems with the Mishnah, or the issues that are going to come with the Mishnah that everybody has to address is, why? Why? What is different between Alav V'Alimo than, for instance, in the previous Mishnah, which is Alav V'Alishto? I mean, why should there be a difference in halacha when it's him and his mom versus him and his wife? Or same thing, Alav V'Alaviv. Why is the halacha different over here? What changes? What is so different that makes it that the halacha is actually different? That's one question. And the second question is, if we say before, like in the previous Mishnah, about Alav V'Alishto, that we say that the possessions or certain possessions are b'chezkat yoshei ha'aim, right, in the mother's possession, Yoshei Ha'aim, versus over here by Isha, we say that there's a split, that the Isha is muhzak in certain properties. But then when it comes to his mother, why doesn't his mother have the same status as the wife, meaning that they're both women, and why don't they have the same chazakah in the property? So those two issues you're going to have to answer to try to reconcile between why the halacha is different over here than it is in the previous Mishnah. With regards to the fact of them being muzak versus not muzak, there's a Tosfos in the previous Amud that gives a number of suggestions about why it could be the case. One suggestion is that, this is according to the Manda Amar, that Yerusha Rabbal is the Rabbanon. Yerushat HaBaal is only Midor Rabban and not Midor Raisa, and that would change, of course, the status when you have a husband and a wife versus a son and a mother. Tosfos rejects that and says that you could even explain this according to one who says Midor Raisa, because he says, what's the difference? We've seen this before, we're going to see it at the end of today's daf again, which is that the relationship between a husband and wife is different than the relationship between a son and a mother. A husband and a wife is a non-blood relationship. It's a korvav inheritance, right, that is dictated by the Torah, but not a natural, right, relationship, as opposed to a son and a mother, which is a natural relationship that comes from blood relationship. So that might be one explanation. Tosfos, again, rejects that explanation. And then the Ri gives the final answer, which is the Ri Teretz. I'll give read, just read it to you. It's the end of the Tosfos of Beit Hillel, Amrim Nechasim B'Chezkatam on the previous Amud of Kvod Nenchet. Ri Teretz, the Gabi Baal, Yesh Lach Shov Yoter B'Chezkat HaYisha. By a husband, it makes more sense to say it's in the possession of the wife. Lefi Shekamosha Derech HaYisha Meita Lamut Kodem Baala Kach Derech HaBaal Lamut Kodem HaYisha. Right? V'lo Yerushena V'ein Zu Parnayot. Meaning that there's an equal probability that the husband will predecease the wife, or that the wife will predecease the husband. I mean that since there are equal percentages or opportunities that they will each pass away, therefore we say that each one is mukhzak in their property. The wife doesn't automatically assume everything's going to go to her husband. Or the husband doesn't automatically assume he's going to have to pay the wife. Each one holds on to their possessions because we're unsure of which one will pass away first. That's not true by a mother and a son. In this case, the wife doesn't have a smichut adat that she's going to get everything. Or the other way around, the husband doesn't have a smichut adat, he's going to get everything from his wife, because we don't know the order. On the other hand, if the son dies before the mother, that would be an unusual circumstance. So therefore, right, or it really should be here, Bechezkato. It's wrong here. Feshuatid, Ve'umid, Liereshatimo. Yoter Mashuatid, Abal, Liereshatishto. Because the son is the inline inheritor. That should be the natural course of inheritance. If that is the natural course of inheritance, then we assume that the mother, almost in some ways, relinquishes her rights, and the son has a greater hold on the property. Because her assumption is that the son will inherit her. That is not true in a husband-wife relationship, because they are on the same footing. They're an equal level. They're around the same age, relatively. And therefore, we assume that they would pass away at a relative some time, and therefore, each one stays mukhzak in their property without giving up any rights. But the mother and the son, we say the mother loses some rights because the mother is assumed, right, to have passed away before the son, and we assume that her son will get possession of it. So that's where the Ri explains, right, that issue of why the difference in terms of the standing of the mother versus the standing of the isha. The second question, and this was the Rashbam deals with and Tosfos disagrees with him. Rashbam's asked the question about what is the difference between them. And Rashbam here on this daf, it's on the narrow lines, the bottom of the narrow lines, four or five lines down from the bottom, before the narrow lines end, it says, "Velo domi l'nafal abayt alav el aviv dile'el." It's not similar to the previous Mishnah. In the previous Mishnah, the argument is between someone who is a Yoresh and someone who has a document, a creditor. Right? Also by the husband and the wife. And in the previous Mishnah, which is the husband and the wife, also over there, each party is mukhzak in certain property. This woman brought these into the marriage. The husband has an obligation to pay her. But each one is mukhzak in the property. So over here, the wife inherited for her husband. Her husband already passed away. She's inherited everything. So now you're talking about the mother and the son. The mother and the son over here, both coming from the same, right, chazakah. They're both coming to be Yerusha and Yerusha of the Kol, trying to be Yeresh, everything that's there. So because they are both coming to be Yeresh, everything that's there, they're on equal footing, and the safek is equal. As opposed to the first Mishnah by him and his father, Right? By him and his father, the question wasn't about whether it's Yoshe Av, Yoshe Ben, because they're the same Yoshe. The question there is between a creditor and the son. So the son is coming me, right, Tzad Vadai, that he's a Yorish, and the creditors are coming me Tzad Safek, that they have a claim against the estate. So in Safek, Motzei Midei Vadai. Also in the Mishnah of Ishto and him, then there's, they're both Muchzak in whatever properties they have. I mean, they both have a full claim on the properties they have, and then the other one is trying to extract that property. So whoever's Muchzak in the property has greater rights. The one who's trying to extract the property, right, that's Mosi Michaver Olavaraya. Yeah, because not in all circumstances will he inherit. I mean, in the case by the son should inherit no matter what. In either, no matter who passed away first, the grandson or whoever it is, will inherit no matter what. The creditor only gets it in one of the two scenarios. So that's a safek versus a vadai. That's why it's called. I'm not saying that the creditor doesn't have a claim. He has a vadai claim on that in the one scenario.
In one aspect, it's safek.
Right. But if you look at the whole picture, then there's two.
He's less than
the one who's Yorish. So that's how the Rashbam explains it. But now the Rashbam has to come, and he says he got a question from the Rabotai Shebelotir. So if you look at it, it's in the wide, as the lines get to the widest lines, it's one line up from that. It says, Azot she'alti mi Rabotai Shebelotir, u'shuvatai lahem besof haperek, trufot u'b'chunot. Right, they're all written out and clear. V'omerani she'en l'ruvein kan klum, mishom David Binyamin Yoresh Vadai b'miktzat, Ruvein Safek. So the question that he is raised over here is a question of why doesn't Reuven ben Yaakov have any claim over here? For instance, let's set up the case. You have Rachel, the mother. Yosef, the son. So now, when Yosef dies, and according to the Rashbam, Yosef who dies, he has no children. And, we'll see in a second, he has no brothers whatsoever. So now, there are two possibilities. Either Rachel died first, and Yosef's the inheritor. Or, right, Yosef dies first, and then the Yoshe Ha'im, wherever the Yoshe Ha'im are here, that Yosef's relatives will inherit, or her relatives actually will inherit everything. So now, who are these relatives? So now, there might be another son. Yosef might actually have a brother, but a brother through the father. I mean, Reuven ben Yaakov, for instance. Reuven ben Yaakov is Yosef's brother. So now Reuven shows up and says, listen, it belongs to me. You know why it belongs to me over here? Because I am a brother to Yosef and I inherit Yosef. So now, if I come to inherit Yosef as a brother, if Rachel died first and Yosef inherited, then Reuven can come along and make a claim. Right? The other way around, if Yosef died first, and then the mother got the property, whoever got the property, then the mother's property then, afterwards will not come to her son, because her son's not alive anymore. And we'll see in a second that in the Kever, he's not Morish. So once he's passed, Yosef is not Yerush's mother once he's passed away. Then it won't go to Reuven ben Yaakov, it won't go to his brother through the father. So then, whoever is left, the mother is... Only if he's alive, but we're assuming that he's not alive here. He would be, the Baal would get it. The son wouldn't be relevant at all if he was alive. So the Rashbam claims, so that he makes two claims. One is what you just suggested, the husband is not alive, that you have to agree to. The second is that he claims that Yosef has no brothers. Yosef does not have a brother named Binyamin. Why? Because if Yosef had a brother named Binyamin, Reuven would get zero. Why would Reuven get zero? And that's what he just wrote over here. Because... He says that, and this is an unbelievable line, I'll read it again to you so you can hear it. He says, if there was a son, Binyamin, Reuven would get nothing here. If his brother, Binyamin, was alive, that means that he has a brother through the mother, and then Reuven is a brother through the father. So now inheritance only passes to brothers through the father. So now what happens? So if, listen to the two scenarios are, that Yosef died after his mother. If Yosef dies after his mother passed away, then Yerusha went to him and his brother Binyamin. They split it. 50% to him, 50% to his brother Binyamin. And Reuven, his brother through the father, comes to take that 50%. The other scenario is that Yosef died first, and then the mother is Morish, all of it to whom? To Binyamin, because he's the only one left now. So now the Rashbam says, Uvein safek, vein safek, mitzeh bidei vadai. So listen to this. Benjamin is a vadai morish over here. No matter which scenario, Benjamin will end up with something. If the mother died first, Benjamin gets 50% of the Yerusha. If the Yosef died first, Benjamin gets 100% of the Yerusha. So Benjamin, on 50% of it, is a vadai, like 100%. He gets 50% of it. Reuven, on the other hand, is a safek in 50%. He can get no more than 50%, and even in that 50%, he's a safek. So the Rashbam says, "Ein safek motzei midei vadai," and Benjamin's a vadai, and therefore he gets everything. Now, with the unbelievable statement, he proves it from the Gemara and Yevamot. It's a very difficult what the Rashbam is about to say. The Rashbam is saying that he's in vadai in 50%, and therefore he gets rights in the other 50%. Why should it be that way? In the 50%, I agree with you. He's a vadai. The other 50%, he's the same safek as Reuven. That's not what the Rashbam says. He proves it from Yevamot, that when you're a vadai in 50% of the property, you get rights in the other property. The other half of the property, you're also viewed as a vadai, and you have greater rights than someone else who's a safek. Right. So he quotes, right? That's the problem, right? The problem is the Mishnah Bava Metzia is exactly what Tosfos quotes to say, what are you talking about? Bava Metzia, it says that you have shnayim, that one comes along and says that I own the whole thing, and the other one says I own half of it. So what do? This one takes a shvua, ein pachot me revia. The other one says, ein pachot me shloshet revia.
You have to guess because it's his vada.
Right, but he says, I know less than three quarters. The other one says, I know less than a quarter. But what you're saying is exactly right. He gets the 50% he gets as a vadai. But the other 50% is still the safek. Where do you get this? Now, the Rishbam has a proof from Yevamot. And I won't go through the details of his proof from Yevamot. Tosfos rereads that, or explains the Gemara in Yevamot differently in order to get around it. But the Rashbam's belief, Tosfos, of course, like you just suggested, David takes issue with this and says, come on, this is, doesn't work that way. In the Vaday, the 50%, yes, but there's still a Safek about the other 50%, and you're on equal footing. So even if there was a brother Binyamin, Reuven would still have a claim here, and this whole Mishnah could still exist even with a brother Binyamin. So that's the way Tosfos, that's the way Tosfos concludes over here, that it's not a problem of Binyamin, because in the 50% you are Vaday. And the other 50%, there's a safek, and that's why Yechloku, Binyamin and Reuven, will split the other 50% over here. So now, why? What is the difference? I mean, how do you explain this difference between the Rashbam and the Tosafot? Why do they have this difference in position, or why do they explain in this way? So the Ri says, "Alkein nira the Ri shmosh tirtz a riva the hacham ayir shapir sheish la banim achirim laim." That even in case where there's a binyamin there, it works. So that's not a problem. Barikari le yabam vaday, and explains the yubum over there is a different scenario. So what's the difference? What's the ikar machlokas between them? The ikar machlokas between them is the achronim discusses the ktos, and others discuss this machlokas between the Rashbam and Tosfot is how you view the estate. How do you view an estate before distribution? It's called tfusat habayit. Tfusat habayit, when the mother passes away, or a father passes away, and now the estate is available to the children. So now, or the yoshim. How do you view it? You can view it in one of two ways, and this is consistent with the Shitot and other places, the Rashbam and Tosfot. One possibility is that everybody, you are now partners. All the children are partners in the estate. We just don't know which chelik belongs to you. It's just an issue of birur. Everybody has, so here if you have two brothers, each brother owns 50% of the estate, their partners is 50% partners, we just don't know which 50% they're going to get. But we know for sure that they're already 50%. Or, you could suggest that when there's an estate, that you have a full claim on the entire estate. That a yoresh, when there's an estate available, he has a claim on the entire estate. Later on, when they divide it up, we'll know there'll be a division of the estate. But until that point in time, you're not partners. Each individual has 100% claim on the estate, and then the division happens later. And that's how you could explain the difference here between Tosfos and the Rashbam. Tosfos believes that Tfusat HaBayit is that each person's already got their division. There's already 50-50% division, and therefore it's just a birur who's where your 50% is. So therefore, if you have a vadai in one half, why should that have any impact on the other half? Because your partnership or your division's already done. You just have to figure out where that division is. So of course, if you're vadai in one half, the other half should not be impacted by that, and that's exactly what Tosfos' Shita is. Then the Rashbam believes that when it comes to an estate, we don't look at it as divided already. We look at the estate as just being a Yerusha that's available. It's like an entity, it's a unit that's totally available to each one of the Yerushim. So each Yerush looks at it and it has a hold on the entirety of the estate. And therefore, according to the Rishbam, if you have a Vadai claim on a portion of the estate, that means that you have a hold on the entire estate. And that will impact not only your 50%, but even the other 50%. And so because of that, it will influence, even though if it was already split, it should have no influence. But because it's pre-split, therefore it influences the other half, and your Vadai claim on the estate is greater than the Safek claim coming from someone else onto the entirety of the estate. So that's how you have to explain the difference between, right, the Rishbam Shita and Tosu Shita, that's the Shita Tam. In other places, how they view Tfusat Tabayit, or estate, versus now how we look at the inheritors here, how you look at the Safek and Vadai. So it's important in describing or differentiating between this Mishnah and the previous Mishnayot. Right now, the Gemara asks the question, b'chazkat mi? In whose chazakah, when we say Rabbi Akiva, modiv, shu b'nechasim b'chazkatan, who is chazkatan over here? So obviously two possibilities. Rabbi Lo omer b'chazkat yoshe ha'im. It's in the chazakah of the yoshe ha'im, those that inherit the mother over here. So that's the possibility of the yoshe ha'im is anybody who's related to the mother, who would have inherited from the mother, whether it's her father, her brothers, whoever it is that should get the Yoshea Aim. According to Tosos, it could even be the other brother. I mean, that the other brother through the mother, Binyamin, could also be the Yoshea Aim over here. Right? And the Rabbi Zera Amar Bechezkat Yoshea Ben, the inheritor of the son. Over here, the inheritor of the son is his brothers through the father. Right, his father, meaning that the husband over here, but the husband's not alive, so it would become his brothers through the father. Reuven ben Yaakov would be the Yosheha, Yosheha ben over here. So now, Kisolik Rabbi Zera, when Rabbi Zera went up to Eretz Yisrael, Kam b'shitatei d'Rabbi Ilo, he then took on the position of Rabbi Ilo, so he switched his position from saying Yosheha ben to Yosheha aim. Now, the Girsa here says, Kam Rabba b'shitate de Rabbi Zera, that Rabba took on the position of Rabbi Zera. The Bach and the Rishbam and others wipe out this Girsa, and so it's not there. So, Amar Rabbi Zera, Shma Mino, Avir Deretz Yisrael Machim. Alright, Avir Deretz is Machim, because what do you see? That when he went up to Eretz Yisrael, then he came to the truth. Right, that he was able to see that the position of Rabbi Ilo was the proper position, and therefore he was kam b'shitate de Rabbi Ilo. Now, the Rishbam here narrows this down. You would have thought, like from the Gemara in Ketubot, Avir Deretz Yisrael Machim is like a great thing. All B'nai Chutz La'aretz that come to Eretz Yisrael, it has an impact on them, and the Gemara in Ketubot is extensive about the benefits of coming to Eretz Yisrael, and Avir Deretz Yisrael Machim. Over here, the Rishbam, he listens to the Rishbam, he says, Shema aliti l'Eretz Yisrael, natati et libi, let's say, mishitati arishuna, v'avod et omitata dvarim. I just, when I came to Eretz Yisrael, I did a chazara on the sugya, and then I realized that I was wrong. So, and that narrows down what Avir Deretz Yisrael means. Just that I looked it over again, it was Me'ayin, and when it was Me'ayin Eretz Yisrael, I got it right. Not that it's something like a broader perspective on the Kedushat Haaretz and Avir Deretz Yisrael Machim, that coming to Eretz Yisrael is what enlightened him. No, he was just chazering in Eretz Yisrael, and so he got the right answer. It's still, right, because he chazered in Eretz Yisrael, it was better, but I think you could have been much more broad in your perspective. Here, the Rosh Hashanah really narrows the Chiddush of Avir Deretz Yisrael Machim. Right. Tzadav Shat, right? So he, the time, Mai, what's the reasoning? What's the reasoning that the Yorshei Ha'aim have a better chazaka over here? The answer is, Amar Abayi, ho v'chuzkuka nachla ba'oto shevet. It's because the oto shevet, she, the wife, or the mother, is always mityacheset achar the shevet aviha. She still belongs to her father's shevet, even after she's married. Even though her sons who inherit her will be mavir nachla, or if her husband inherits will be mavir nachla, but as long as she's still in the picture, it's still with her shevet. So in order to be mavir nachala, we have to have a serious consideration to move it. I mean, if you want to say who's mukhzak in the property, it's her shevet that is mukhzak in the property. So we're going to say, if there's a safek over here, we'd rather leave it, who's the one who's mukhzak? The one's mukhzak is her father's shevet, the shevet that she comes from. If you want to move it to another shevet, you want to move it to her son, you want to, it doesn't necessarily have, depends who her husband was, but I'm saying, if you want to move it to her son, that's a motzi mechaveru, that's the one who is trying to extract it, and they're going to have to bring the proof. Over here, so that's why we say shemichtiyachesed akshar shevet havia. Whereas, obviously in the previous Mishnah we did not say that about the isha, right, that she's muzaket be shevet havia. We said that when balan isha, the woman has what she brought into the marriage. That's muzaket with her shevet, with her. What the husband's going to owe her in the future, like the ketubah or the nechasim tzon barzel, those are not muzak the shita. It's here. He's muzak in it. Either because she gave it to him or he hasn't paid the ketubah yet. On the other hand, once the husband has died and she's inherited her husband, then everything becomes mukzeket l'shevet, like to her shevet. I mean, even what she's taking from the husband, for instance, the payment of the ketubah that's now in her possession, that becomes mukzeket l'shivta, even though technically it came from her husband to her. But then we classify that all as mukzeket b'shevet aviha, and therefore that's why we say mukzeket, the Yorshei Ha'im have the better claim here than the Yorshei HaBen. Right now, the next line in the Gemara, Malo Ben Azayah Al Chalukim Anu Mitzdarim, Abri Simlai Adamra, that the word Adam means Hada. From this we can conclude, Ben Azai Talmid Chaver Rabbi Akiva Abba, that he was not only a student, but he later became a peer of Rabbi Akiva. Why? Because he addresses him in the second person. The Kamalei Shibato, that you came. You came in second person. If he was still a Talmid and not a Talmid Chaver, he would have to address him as Rabbeinu or a Rebbe. The fact that he doesn't address him in the third person is indicative of that they had a peer relationship. From here you conclude that Ben Azai reached the level of Talmid Chaver after he had been a Talmid of Rabbi Akiva, he became a peer, and that's why he's addressing him in the second person over here. Right. But here he just says from this, you can see the way he addressed him, not because when you have a machlokas, doesn't indicate how they address. Here he specifically addressed Rabbi Akiva, and his addressing of Rabbi Akiva, he used the second person, which would indicate a peer relationship and not a Talmid Rebbe relationship. Okay, now we're going to skip to the end of the Gemara that we did yesterday, which is here on the Daf Kuftet Amud Bet. In Kuftet Amud Bet, it's 2, 4, 6, 7 lines up in the narrow line. So in the bottom of the narrow line, 7 lines up. Bo Minei Rav Sheshet. They want to know from Rav Sheshet, Ben, Mahu Shireshet Imo Bakever, Anchil Achim in Av. Right, what is the din? A son, right, who is passed away already. When he is passed already, in the kever, can he still inherit his mother in order to pass it to his brothers through the father? So our case here, which is what the Gemara is going to bring the Mishnah, is the case here. You have Rachel, who passes away after her son Yosef passed away. Yosef already passed away, then Rachel passes away. Reuven, Shimon, and Levi say, listen, he's our brother. So, true, he's dead. True, he's in the kever. But that shouldn't change the fact that he's Yorash's mother, and that gives us the property afterwards. Like any other Yerusha, if you have a father who passes away, the grandfather passes it to the grandchildren, because the father is able to pass it bekever to the grandchildren. So what's the question over here is, does this work? By a mother to a son, does it work? And we had this Gemara back in Yeshnochlim, and that's the Gemara is going to bring it again here. This whole sugya of Yeshnochlim. So Amar Lehu Rav Sheshet Tzinitua. We have a brisa that explains this. Av Shenishba Umeit Bino B'Medina. A father was taken into captivity, and a son who is present, who's here, right? Uben Shenishba Umeit Aviv B'Nida. Or a son who was taken captive, and then a father who dies in proximity to us here in the right the local area. So now, the safek is who died first. They both end up dying. But what we don't know is the one in captivity, when did he die? I mean, the one who is present in front of us, the one who is, right, b'medina, we know when they die. What we don't know is the one in captivity, when did they die? So Yoshea Av, v'Yoshea Ben Yochloku. The inheritors of the father and the brother and the son, they will split it. So I says, hey, chidami. Wait a minute. What's the case here? How could you ever have somebody who is a Yerusha of the father and not a Yerusha of the ben? Meaning that this is a blood relationship through the father. That means that automatically any Yerusha Av is also a Yerusha ben. So for instance, if you're talking about grandchildren, right, they're both Yerushim of the ben and Yerushim of the Av. So where do you have a case where they're not an equal footing? Elaim Makariktani, if you want to suggest that, it's like it's written, Hai Nihu Yerusha Av, Hai Nihu Yerusha Ben. You're talking about the exact same inheritors. So for instance, like a grandchild, Chanoch and Falu. So you have Reuven and Yaakov. We're not sure who died first. And then Chanoch and Falu, the grandchildren. So now you have a question about who they inherit. The Yoshea Av, who is the Yoshea Av? The Yoshea Av are the grandchildren. Who's the Yoshea Ben? The grandchildren. So what's the Safek over here? There is no Safek. Doesn't matter. Either way, the Chanoch and Falu end up with the property. Right? Even if he has brothers. Even if Reuven has Shimon and Levi are brothers. Reuven had a piece of his father's estate. And so either it's coming from Yaakov Reuven to them, all right? Either or Reuven inherited and then gave it to them, or it came straight from Yaakov because they step into Reuven's shoes. So either way, they end up with it. So there's nothing to talk about. This must be the case. Av shenishba, a father was taken captive, umet. Ben bito b'medina, and his grandchild through his daughter, right? His grandchild through his daughter died here locally, right? Uben shenishba. Over here, the Girsa Bito is taken out. Uben Shinishba, You have a son who was taken captive. Umeit avi imo. His grandfather, his maternal grandfather, passed away locally. So v'lo yadinan ha'minai umeit bereisha. We don't know who died first. So now it makes a difference. Why does it have a daughter, right, who passes away now? Daughter passes away. Who inherits this daughter? Does the inheritance go to the father, or does the inheritance go to the son? Yosheav, right? So who are the Yosheav here? Yosheav are Cheimo, the brothers of the mother. V'Yosheav ben, who are the Yosheav ben? Those are Acheav ben, the brothers of this son. Yachloku, they split it. Now v'Meita Nehi Nami the ben mate Bereisha. Wait a minute. If you believe that a son, right, can inherit even in the grave, then it should be irrelevant whether he died first or he died second. Why should it matter whether the son predeceased the father-in-law, the grandfather, or whether the grandfather predeceased the grandson? Why should it make a difference? Why? Because if the son inherits his mother automatically, whether he's alive or not, then who's the owner here? No matter what, Yosef's brother should inherit him. So let's again go through the case here. You have a case where it is Yosef, Rachel, and Lavan. Lavan is the father of Rachel, and Yosef is the son of Rachel. So now we're not sure. We have a case where Lavan and Yosef, we have a safek about who died first, Yosef or Lavan. We don't know who died first. So what do we say? What's the din? The din is Yachloku. Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, who are Yosef's brothers, they get a half. Why? Because it's a possibility that Lavan died first, then Yosef, and Yosef inherits his mother. Yosef inherits his mother. Who inherits Yosef? His brothers through the father. That's Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. So that's one possibility. On the other hand, if Yosef died first, now what's the possibility?
So of course they get it.
If Yosef would inherit even when he was passed away, that means that when Rachel passes away, it goes to Yosef, and Reuven, Shimon, and Levi get it also. So it must be that he doesn't inherit in the grave. Because if he doesn't inherit in the grave, then you have a case where the Lavan would inherit. I mean that Yosef dies first. When Yosef dies first, he gets nothing. So now who does the possessions of Rachel go to? They go to Lavan's children. Lavan's children are Imo Minav, which is Lavan's other sons. Lavan's other sons will inherit their sister Rachel. So that's why you have a case of Yachloku. Because there's two possibilities. One possibility where Lavan's sons or Rachel's brothers inherit. One possibility where the brothers of Yosef will inherit. So that's why Yachloku. But if you believe that Yosef can still inherit after he's passed away, then there's only one person who's going to inherit here. It's Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. There's only one way to go. So what do you prove from here? That a son does not inherit, right, in the grave. So that's the Gemara says, "Eitan he nami the ben mate bereisha liarte laavu adimei bekavrei." Shouldn't matter. He would automatically, right, inherit v'lertinu lachua min avua, and then he'll automatically give it to Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. So if it's irrelevant when the son passes away because he inherits even in the grave his mother, then no matter what, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi are going to end up with the property, because even if he died first, right, he'll still, when the end, when Lavan dies, the property will come to him. And the property comes to him, it will go then to Reuben, Shimon, and Levi, that his mother's possessions. Ella lav shma mina en yirisha timo bekever anchil achim me'av. So that's it. We can conclude from that. So Amar le Ravach Abar Yumi le Bayi afanam na mitanina. We learned it in our Mishnah. What does that mean? We learned it in our Mishnah. Nafala bayt alav yalimo. It's a case of our Mishnah. Elu ve'elu modim shiachloku. They split it. In our Mishnah, you have the same problem again. They're splitting it. Vim ita nihi nami deben meit bereisha. If you think that a son can still inherit his mother when he's in the grave, then even if he dies first, he'll inherit his mother, Yosef. Even if he predeceases his mother Rachel, when Rachel dies, he will inherit her. And then Reuven, Shimon, and Levi will get their hands on it. Must be again. The conclusion from this is clear, that he does not inherit her in the grave, because then you'll have a difference. Because then, if he died after his mother, then he inherited. Yosef dies after his mother Rachel, then he inherits his mother, and then his brothers through the father, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, will inherit him. But the other scenario, where he predeceases his mother, now he's longer entitled to the Yerusha of Rachel. And Rachel's Yerusha will pass to the Yoshe Ha'ein. Who are the Yoshe Ha'ein? Her brothers. Right? Her brothers are the Yoshe Ha'ein. And as her brothers being the Yoshe Ha'ein, then they get that, in that scenario they get it. So now you have Yachloku. You have a case of Yachloku, because each, in the two scenarios, 50% chance that Reuben, Shimon, and Levi get it, 50% chance that Rachel's brothers, the sons of Laban, will get it. So now Yachloku. But if you believe that the son can inherit when he's in the grave, then it's 100% that Reuben, Shimon, and Levi will get the property. Because no matter what, they're entitled to the, no matter what, they're entitled to the property over here, because Yosef still inherits his mother even after he has passed away. But time am I. Now, the Gemara wants to know, why is this true? Why is it true that the son does not inherit his mother in the grave? Now, this Gemara, by the way, again, is from the Gemara we did earlier in Yishnah Chleim. It's a clip, a total clip of the Gemara that we had before, and you're going to see it in a second. Amar Ambayi, Nemra Siba Beben, Nemra Siba Babal. There is Hasavat Nachala. We know that Nachala moves Shvatim when it comes to a son inheriting a mother, and with a husband inheriting a wife, right? That says, Lo Yisov Nachala, right? To Mishevet the Shevet. So you're not allowed to have a Nachala move from one Shevet to another Shevet. That was with Benot Levchad, that the Torah says in that generation. So what is Yisov Nachala? There are two possibilities of Yisov Nachala. What are the two possibilities? One is from the wife to the husband, and the other one is from the mother to the son. So since they both are in that same category of Avarat Nachala, or Hasavat Nachala, Masi Ba Hamura Babal, there where the Baal, we're talking about Hasavat Nachala by the Baal, Eina Baal Yerishit Yishto Bakever. The husband does not inherit his wife by Kever. Whose Kever is a question over here? It's Machlokas Reshbam and Tosfot. If you remember back from the Gemara in Kufi Yudalit Amud Bet, I'll explain it in a second. Af Siba Hamura Baben, by a ben, ain't a ben yirishit imo, but kever. Over here it's clear that the kever means the kever of the ben. That when the ben is in the kever, that he does not give over to his brothers through the father. So it's some sort of, there's a parallel in Hasava. There's a parallel in the fact that these two individuals inherit through the same methodology, because they are moving nachala in their inheritance, and therefore they'll have the same reason. So now the Rashban claims, this is what he claims back on Kuf Yudat Amud Bet, that the kever over here is that ishto bekever. His wife is in the kever. So a husband does not inherit his wife when his wife is in the kever. A husband, once his wife passes away, he gets everything that his wife had in her possession. But say, for instance, in the future, his wife was an only child. And then her father, his father-in-law passes away. When his father-in-law passes away, and then the inheritance should come to the mother, he has no entitlement to that, because that came after she was already bekever. So already after she was in the kever, the husband gets nothing from the wife after the wife is in the kever. And over here, the same by ben, the ben does not yerush his mother, bekever. The kever over here means the son is not yerush. So now why is this? What's the, now the difference, that's exactly what the Rashbam says, hai kever lo dami lo hau kever, the baal. The kever is different over here. You're talking about two different people. Why? Because in one case you're talking about, in a baal yerush et ishto bekever, you're talking about the morish being in the kever. Over here, the morish in the kever is the wife who's going to be morish to her baal, she's already in the kever. In the second case, you're saying that the ben, who is yoresh, his mother is in the kever. The yoresh, the inheritor, is in the grave. In the first case, you're saying the bequeather, the wife, is in the grave.
But
and in second
case, they're both actually
being. So that's exactly what the Rashbam explains. Very good. Excellent. That the son is also a bequeather here, because he inherits his mother to bequeath it to his brothers through the father. So exactly. So that's how the Rashbam tries to reconcile it and say that they're both the same kever in some way, which is that they're both bequeathers in the end. That even though it sounds a little different, even though the kever here is different, but in the end they end up being similar, because they both are bequeathers. So just like the husband, the wife, does not bequeath in the grave to her husband, so too the son from the mother does not bequeath to his brothers through the father in the grave. So that's the way the Rashbam explains it. Tosfos on Kuf Yud Aleph takes issue with this explanation, and therefore he gives the explanation that the kever over here, bakever, is the kever of the baal. It's the kever of the baal. That the husband, in a baal yerishit ishto bekever, a husband does not inherit his wife after he has passed away. That means once the husband passes away, he no longer inherits his wife. So that's what we're talking about here. Then we're talking about the same level. According to Tosfot, you have a baal, a husband who's an inheritor, he passes away, he no longer inherits his wife. A son, who's supposed to inherit his mother, if he passes away, he no longer inherits his mother. So now you're on parallel footing. The only problem now for Tosfot is what? How do you know? How do you know that a husband does not inherit his wife when he has passed away already? How do you know more that a husband does not inherit his wife when he's passed away than you know that a son doesn't inherit his mother after she has passed away? Why is one more obvious than the other? The Gemara over here is making a parallel, a hekesh between them, and saying by the husband it's clear that he doesn't inherit. But by the son, we learn out from the husband. So Tosfos asks this question back on Kufiyot Daled Amud Bet, and he says, that's a nice explanation, but how do you explain it now? How do you know? How do you know that a husband has more rights, or is more obvious that he gets nothing when he's in the grave, like the son does? So now, the Rivam explained over there, the Rivam was again the brother of the Rashbam, had explained over there that the husband comes from a relationship that is established through marriage and not through blood. And therefore, when he passes away, the relationship is severed. So when he passes away, the relationship is severed. Just like if he got divorced, the relationship would be severed. So too, when he passed away, the relationship is severed. And that's why it's obvious to the Gemara that the husband does not inherit in the grave, where it's not obvious that the son won't inherit his mother in the grave. Because you're talking about one which is a relationship of marriage, versus one is a relationship of blood. The Tosfos over there says that's not true, because we see in other places that's not the case, that a husband is still considered a relative of his wife, even in the grave. So the Re says that in Adam Yoresh Bekever and Chiluk Rovim Al Yedei Mishmush, the way that a person in the grave passes something on to his relatives is through what's called Mishmush. That's what we saw earlier in Yishnochlim, which is that Mishmush means that you go up and down the lineage line. Doesn't matter. If someone's already passed away, we still keep looking for relatives that are related. But that only works, that's only true, because we learn out from the Pasuk, Uvein Ein Lo. Uvein Ein Lo, we say, Ayin Alav. Check to see that there's no relatives whatsoever. Even if he's dead, we look for his children and his grandchildren. So what do you see? Where do we learn out that you look for other relatives or other relationships after someone's in the kever? We learn out from Uvein Ein Lo. Ben is a blood relationship. So that means that this idea that you can move property or their relatives still exist even after their link to the other individuals passed away is because we're learning now from Uvein Ein Lo. Uvein Ein Lo is a blood relationship. So by a blood relationship, we say your blood relationship still exists, or we say that it passes through all the different generations and all over the place, as long as it's a blood relationship. But if it's a relationship in marriage, that does not exist. Post-marriage, we don't say, I ain't a love. Look and see. Oh, where were the husband's relatives? And they'll come with the claim of the husband. That doesn't work. It's only the son's relatives who can come and come with the claim of the son to get it, because the Pasuk says it, u bein ein lo. All right, so that's a machlokus between Rashbam and the Tosafot. How to explain the word kever here, whether it's the husband in the kever or the isha or the wife in the kever. And based on that, you'll have to explain again why. Why it's the same. The Rashbam explains that they're both bequeathers in the end. And the Tosafot explains what's the difference between a baal and a son. Why is a baal more obvious that he does not inherit his wife bekever versus a son? And he gives two answers. The Rivam's answer is that the relationship is severed at death because it's a marriage relationship. And the Re says, that the relationship is still existent, but it's a different type of relationship. The relationship where we say mishmush, that you look for all relatives even after death, only applies to blood relatives, does not apply to marriage. Right, so how damerle, this is from earlier in the Masechta. That I'm going to sell you anything that I own, that is I called, that I bought from Bar Sisin, I'm selling to you. There was one property that was called Bay Bar Sisin. And Amalei halav the Bar Sisin havi. So the seller says, "Listen, this wasn't a Bar Sisin property. Vikri hu the mikre the Bay Bar Sisin. The property is called Bay Bar Sisin, but I didn't buy it from Bay Bar Sisin. It was already in my possession. I never bought it from. I inherited it. So atel kameid Rav Nachman. They gave it from Nachman. Ukum biyad al lokeach. Rav Nachman gave it to the lokeach, to the buyer, because he says, "Listen, it's called Bay Bar Sisin. That's where it should be." Amalei Rav Rav Nachman dina hachi. Why should the din be this man? Who is the chazak on the property? The seller. He owns the property now. If the buyer wants to take it away, let him bring a rayah that this was purchased from Bar Sisin and not that it was named Bar Sisin all the way. We have a stira in the psak of Rav Nachman here and Rav here. An individual comes and says, "What are you doing in my house?" I bought it from you, and I ate it for 3 years. I've been living in here for 3 years. You never said anything to me. I didn't need to say anything to you because I was living in the house with you. I was in the inner house. So the reason I never said anything to you is because I lived there. So I had to look at me there of Nachma, and they came in for Nachma, and I'm like, Zil, Barur, Achilatcha. He says, go prove that you live there, the Shnei Chazaka. Oh, so over here now, all of a sudden,
In the previous case, Rav Nachman favored the buyer. Over here, Rav Nachman's favoring the seller and saying that the buyer has got to prove that he stayed there for Shnot Chazakah. Is this really the way the din should be? So he's saying that the proof, the burden of proof, should be on the one who's trying to extract the property over here. So over here, Rova is favoring the lokeach. He's favoring the lokeach. And yet over there, over here, he's calling the lokeach motzi mechaver lavaraya. And over there, he called the mocher a motzi mechaver lavaraya. So kasha the Rova, the Rova, the Rav Nachman, the Rav Nachman, the Rova, the Rova lokasha, hacha mocher kai benichsei, hatam lokeach kai benichsei. Depends who's in the property. Right, over there, the mocher, in the case of Bar Sisin, right there, the mocher was in the property. He's the one who's mufzak in the property. The okeach wants to take it away. He's got to bring a raya to take it away. Over here, in our case, who's living in the property? We have witnesses that this person lived in the property for 3 years. He was the witness that he lived in the property for 3 years. We're going to assume it's his property. Now, the other individual, the quote-unquote seller, shows up and says, I lived with you for those 3 years. Bring proof. Otherwise, we're going to assume, like the Edim, that he lived there for 3 years and it's his property. Now, he doesn't have to watch the shtar. He has a claim. He said, I bought it from you and I lived there shnei chazakah. So he has a valid claim. Go ahead and stay there until he proves that he lived with you there. You want to change that status that we have from the witnesses? So that's why it switches who the burden of proof is on. Why? Over here he says, I'm selling you all property that is I bought from Beir Bar Sisin. And it's called Beir Bar Sisin. Everything, all the evidence points to the fact that it is, but that he bought it from Beit Bar Sisin. Why? Because it's called that. If he wants to make up some story that it's called Beit Bar Sisin, even though he didn't buy it from Beit Bar Sisin, he's got to bring the proof. He's the one who's trying to undermine what would be otherwise the assumptions here. The natural assumption is to assume that Beit Bar Sisin was bought from Bar Sisin. So the fact that he wants to change that, he's got to bring the proof. Hocha, by the case of the house, lo yehelu nakit shtara. Even if he came with a shtar and said, look, I bought the house from him, even if he brought a shtar, he has to bring evidence to the fact that the shtar is a valid shtar. We say, prove the shtar is right. So too, when he comes with a chazakah, we say, prove the chazakah. I mean, that since a chazakah stands in place of a shtar, and just like if he brought a shtar, he would have to prove the validity of the shtar, the veracity of the shtar, so too, by a chazakah, he's got to prove the validity of his chazakah. Show that you lived in this place without someone else interfering. Then we'll know that it's your property. So here, the Gemara brought this Gemara down here because, if you look in Tosfos, the last Tosfos over here, he says, Shum de ari hocha minichasim b'cheskat mihein, because we're dealing with who has chazak on the property, ayti hai uvda demari bayin l'ukma minichasim b'cheskat lokeach b'cheskat mocher. So it's a similar type of case that, talking about, is it lokeach or the mocher? Who has the chazak here? Just like we dealt with fathers and sons and mother and son and the brothers of the son and brothers of the mother, who has chazaka here? So just like over there, it's a similar type of case. But then Tosfos asks a basic question. He says, "Miu tema." We're not talking about they're bringing it from some other mesechta. It's in Baba Batra, in Chesgat Abatim. It's also the other part of the Gemara is in Yesh Nochlin. And here we have the Gemara bring down, right, two exact Gemaras in the same mesechta, because it fits in. It's okay, we understand why it's here, because it has a connection. You can create a connection between, chazakah and chazakah, different types of chazakot, who's the real machzik, in the muhzak in the property. Okay, I see a logical connection. But it's not like we didn't already address it in the Masechta. We already had it other places in the Masechta, so why bring it again? So that's also the question. I see the logical flow, but I don't understand why the Gemara needed to bring it twice in the same Masechta. Enoch Hanami, who was another Masechta, I can understand why they brought it here, because we're in a different Masechta. But if it's already in Baba Batra, why would you bring it again in Baba Batra, the same Sugya that already exists earlier on, and we had a logical place to place it earlier on? So Tosa leaves that as a tema. Okay, we'll stop over here.